I'm going to read from John 16, the last few verses of John chapter 16. Jesus answered and said to them, "Do you now believe? Indeed, the hour is coming, yes, has now come, that you will be scattered, each to his own, and will leave me alone. And yet I am not alone, because the Father is with me. These things have I spoken to you, that in me you may have peace. In the world you will have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I have overcome the world." So today we're looking at Cyprian of Carthage, years 210 to 258. And as we begin, when we talk about Cyprian, we need to talk about persecution. So the first general persecution of Christians began in January of the year 250, and the date is noteworthy. Christians have been around for more than 200 years, yet this was the first systematic effort on the part of the imperial authorities to force Christians to give up their beliefs and to worship the Roman gods. So we're in Carthage today. Here's Carthage on our map. Notice how close to Rome Carthage is. That's not very difficult to get via boat. In some of our other church history discussions, we've been over here in Antioch. We have been over in Asia Minor. We have been in France. We have been in this part of North Africa. But here we're very close to Rome and looking at Carthage. Now, the slide that we saw previously said that 250 is the first organized persecution that happens in the early church. So up until this time, various persecutions are localized within the church. So you'll have a persecution in Rome that strikes for several months, and Christians die and Christians scatter, and then the persecution backs off. Or you'll have persecution in Antioch, and it's intense for a few months, and it backs off. But this is the first time, the year 250, the first time that persecution happens across the entire Roman Empire. And this is going to be significant, and Cyprian is part of the reason Cyprian's important is because of this persecution in part that happens. So let's look at some of the background of Cyprian. I mentioned his dates. He's born in the year 210. He's born to a very wealthy family in Carthage. And he is not going to become a Christian until he's an adult. And it's significant that he's born into a wealthy family because this is part of his education, as he's educated in the ways of the world. And as we've seen from previous men in church history, he's trained in both literature as well as philosophy. And with his education, we're told that, like other boys from his social class, he received a thorough grounding in Latin and rhetoric. And completing his studies, he started a career as an orator and teacher in Carthage. He was a polished Latin stylist, a gifted speaker, well-born, self-assured, and he quickly gained fame as a speaker. So Cyprian, his education pays off early in his life, but he says within his own writing that in this life he felt as though he was tossed around. He didn't feel really grounded in life, but was often tossed. He said that he found himself to be tossed about on the foam of this boastful age, uncertain of his wandering steps, knowing nothing of his real life. So this feeling of being tossed around and this seeing this world as a boastful age, it leads him to a conversation with a pastor named Caecilian. And Caecilian introduces him to the gospel and teaches him the scriptures, and he is converted in his 30s. So he's baptized in his 30s, not as an infant or as a young person, but baptized in his 30s. And because he was wealthy, he believed that a way to show thankfulness for what God has done in his life is that he gave a large portion of his wealth to the poor in Carthage. Now, this is something that was done because the early church often looked down on wealth and luxury, even though many who were important in the early church came from that life. Cyprian gives to the poor after his conversion, and this is something that the poor in Carthage would always remember throughout his life, and it's actually going to be something that is used advantageously as things change in his life later on, which we'll talk about. So in the 240s, he's ordained to the priesthood. He's a pastor. And then in 249, he is elected as bishop over Carthage. So he's over the other pastors. He's the pastor of pastors within Carthage. Now, I mentioned that there were persecutions that began. So at the end of the first century, as Christianity begins to expand, in the Roman Empire, there were about 10,000 Christians. And then by the year 200, there were about 200,000 Christians. And then by the year 250, around Cyprian's time, there's about 250,000 Christians. So you see that the number of Christians just keeps growing and growing and growing. And as Christianity is growing, that's putting pressure on Rome. It's putting pressure on the empire to deal with that. So you have the old Roman gods and the desire for the old Roman gods to be worshipped among the empire. And you have Jews that have lived comfortably within the empire for hundreds and hundreds of years. And the Jews were always given a pass by the Roman Empire. You do what you're going to do. We'll leave you alone, and you leave us alone. So the Jews have always lived comfortably in the Roman Empire. And yet as Christianity is expanding, more and more it's becoming problematic within the Roman Empire. So these persecutions are popping up, and these persecutions are beginning. Now think of those numbers again. 250 around Cyprian's time, there's about 250,000 Christians that are in the empire. By the year 300, listen to this number, historians tell us that there are 6 million Christians. So within 50 years, the expansion of the kingdom of God within the Roman Empire is expanding to the point where all of that pressure, that social pressure and pressure within the government and pressure within all of the class system, all of that is feeling the pressure of Christianity pushing down hard on the Roman Empire, and it is going to break. So what happens is that in the year 249, that's the year Cyprian became the bishop of Carthage, which is spelled wrong on the slide, the emperor Decius made his appearance as the emperor of Rome. And he said to ensure a public display of religious devotion, for which the Romans were renowned, at the beginning of 250. So he announces that when he is inaugurated as emperor, he orders all citizens of the empire to sacrifice to the gods. He intended this to be a public gesture of gratitude for past benefices and a pious prayer for future help. And the decree called for a formal act of religious observance, a libation, which is a drink offering, and the eating of a sacrificial victim, the victim is an animal, or in some cases, sprinkling of a pinch of incense on the altar. And those who were performed the required rite were issued libelous, a certificate that testified that the bearer had fulfilled the civic obligation. So think about that. Christianity's expanding. There's a new emperor that has been installed as the emperor, and he says, as a this decree is going to go out, and as a gesture to the Roman gods, to the old gods, we're going to require a drink offering or a sacrifice of an animal, or in whatever cases they decided locally, a pinch of incense picked up and put on an altar. So think about that in the context of persecution. Okay, our government comes to us and they say, you can keep being Christians. You can keep doing your thing. But what we're going to require of you is that you're going to raise a glass to the false gods of the state. Or you're going to sacrifice an animal and you're going to have a meal sacrificed to the state. Or if your conscience won't allow you to do those things, just take a pinch of this incense and put it on the altar and burn it to the false gods. And then you can go on your way. And you can imagine, if you're like me, you can imagine the struggle, the internal struggle, as to whether that is worth it. Is it worth your freedom and your life and not losing your estate and the safety of your children if you just take a little pinch of incense and throw it on a fire and get the paperwork that says you can go on your way? That's a real struggle in the mind of the Christian during the empire. So as that is required, and as that is expanding in requirement, what Cyprian is seeing is that throughout the empire, Christians are falling. Okay? There are Christians that are falling and sacrificing and giving over to this idolatry, and the ones that are not are systematically being arrested and martyred. So think, Cyprian is a bishop in Carthage. He's sort of like we would say he's the moderator of the presbytery. He has obligations within all of the different pastors and pastorates within his region. And he has to, in a sense, care for them and shepherd them for this time. And there's bishops throughout all of those cities of the Roman Empire that we've looked at. Fabian, the bishop of Rome, he's arrested, and then he dies in prison from being beaten. Alexander, the bishop of Jerusalem, he's arrested, beaten, dies in prison. Fabian of Antioch, Dionysius of Alexandria, all imprisoned, beaten, and dying in prison. And remember, last week we heard of Origen. And Origen was beaten, released, and dies 3 years later of his wounds. So all of these persecutions going out throughout the Roman Empire requiring one of these three things, the libation, the sacrifice, or the pinch of incense, and it's expanding. And what Cyprian is seeing is he's seeing his fellow bishops and pastors dying, and others of the bishops and pastors that are just giving in, and they're doing what they're called to do. Now, what the emperor did was he set up commissions within each of the cities of the Roman Empire so that they could systematically check in to make sure that all of the citizens did the sacrifice that they were required to do. So it's one thing to say, here's a requirement for a government, especially thinking of the size of the Roman Empire. The government saying, everyone's required to do this. But if the government doesn't give an arm to enforce what is required, is it going to be done? No, right? So the government might say, like in the United States tax code right now, you're required to have insurance for all of your children. But the teeth were pulled away from that law, and they're not going to do anything if you do or don't have insurance. So are you actually required? Who knows? But that's how government works. In the Roman Empire, they set up the persecution. They said, this is required. And now we're setting up commissions that are going to make sure that all of these sacrifices occur. In the Carthage Commission, it was five prominent citizens, people that were known to Cyprian's family. Because remember, he's among the wealthy elite of Carthage. So other wealthy elites are part of this commission that makes sure that the sacrifices happen. Now, this is interesting. This piece of papyrus that you see on the screen is a ticket that shows that a sacrifice has happened. And this is something that you would carry that showed that you made your sacrifice to the gods. It's signed by the commission, and it says what your sacrifice was. So either the libation, the animal victim, or the pinch of incense. So this is the wording here offers further information about the circumstances of the sacrifice. It was offered in the presence of the commission, and it followed the issuance of an edict. Furthermore, it's not only a libation, but the sacrifice of an animal, which they had to eat from. And then Charis asked the commissioners to confirm the offering by signing the document, and the confirmation was given by two members of the commission. And in the lower part of the papyrus, the first scribe wrote the date, year one of the emperor, Caesar, Gaius, Messius, Quintus, Tranius, Decius, Pius, Felix, Augustus. And then this is the equivalent of June 16 in the year 250. So this is actually something that you would carry that if somebody said, did you make your sacrifice? And you would pull out your card and you would show that you made a sacrifice. Now let's think. If you're a Christian and you need to make a sacrifice, but your conscience won't allow you, which is right. Like, don't let your conscience let you make that sacrifice. But you get the idea that it's a lesser evil to have a fake piece of papyrus made to carry with you that says, hey, I made the sacrifice. Maybe, just maybe, God would be pleased with that rather than sacrificing. Anyone going back to 2020 and the fake COVID vaccine cards in their mind? Like, I'm not going to ask you if you have one. All right. But these are these fake documents were made, and many Christians or some Christians carried them to avoid the persecution. Now, what happens is that this persecution continues. There's all of this conflict, which I hope that your understanding, or I've helped to describe that well. And what happens is that within the Christian community, Christians start faltering. Christians are either faltering by making the sacrifices, and they're saying, it's just too much pressure. I'm going to make the sacrifice, or I'm going to do the pinch of incense. Or they're faltering and getting these fake documents made that says that they've done it. Now, Cyprian, as a bishop, one in charge of Carthage, he has to step back and watch the persecution within his city and realize that there are Christians that are being faithful and they're dying. There's Christians that are being unfaithful and they're becoming apostate. And there's Christians that think they're faithful and they're lying by having these documents made. And he has to pastor in the midst of that. Now, the immediate impact on the commission's work on the Christian community was devastating. Many Christians complied. Some came forth voluntarily to sacrifice. Some even brought their own wine or other offerings. And Cyprian lamented that only a tiny band stood firm. Okay, there's one story that I read of another bishop showing up to the commission with the lamb under his arm. Like, what a hypocrite, right? What a hypocrite. Now, what happened is the Christians that did not comply with this, their property was confiscated, They were imprisoned. They were tortured. Many were put to death. And several officials were bribed so that they could get the papyrus document signed as a false one. And it's a big mess. So hopefully you're hearing and understanding some of this persecution. And you're seeing that conflict that a pastor would have, not only a pastor over a congregation, but a pastor over other pastors as well. And what a difficult time that was in the year 250. Now, while that persecution was happening, something else happens in the empire. Plague comes at the same time. So you have both persecution and plague. So people are dying from the plague and dying from the persecution. And Cyprian has to shepherd people through this. So what he does is something that is controversial in church history. Bishops are being captured and killed. Lots of people are dying. There's pastors that are turning in other pastors to the government. And Cyprian goes into hiding. And he goes into hiding so that he can write. And he begins to shepherd his other pastors and shepherd the flock in Carthage from behind the scenes with letters, giving them encouragement or admonishment as needed. And he's doing this in his own conscience because it's the only way to be safe. He doesn't know who he can trust. And he sees all of the other fellow bishops throughout the empire that are being captured and that are dying because of their stand for what is right. So persecution happens, plague happens, all of this intensity happening. And then eventually Decius, who is inaugurated as emperor in 250, he's sort of put in place in 249. By 251, he dies. And the pressure valve is totally released. The persecution just stops throughout the empire. Now, what happens is that because Decius dies, the persecution dies. So what do you think happens in the churches? People come back. And as they come back, they say, well, that was hard. That was difficult. And you imagine a little congregation like ours, say there's 100 people, and let's say one third of our congregation was killed. And let's say one third of our congregation got the fake papyrus saying that they sacrificed. You know, they got their little fake COVID vaccine card. Again, don't tell me if you got one. And then the other third sacrificed. Everybody comes back because the persecution's done. We can come back out in the open. Like, you imagine the thunderstorm and then those first rays of light. That first Lord's Day, everybody comes back and checking in on everybody, and you're looking around, and what happens? You say, hey, I stood firm, and I was beaten. I don't even have a left arm anymore, and you got a fake piece of paper, and now we're coming back to worship together. And you say, well, you know, my mom died in that persecution because she stood for Christ. And you ran off and denied the gospel, but now that the persecution's done, you're back. Like, imagine that church culture. And that's what we have. We have two groups of people. This lower painting is of the plague, another Cyprian copy of his writing, medieval manuscript. What we have is these two groups that develop in the church that are called the confessors and the lapsed. The confessors is an interesting term because several times throughout church history, the term confessors or the confessing church comes up within church history. Even if you know anything about World War II German church history, the confessing church becomes a thing within Nazi German church history. But that term is something that pops up throughout church history. So the confessors, those that stood for the faith and the lapsed, those that faltered either by denying the faith or having fake documents signed. And Cyprian has to pastor these people. And the question comes, what do we do with the brothers who broke their oath to Christ? They're called the lapsed because of the sacrifice or the certificate. And you remember the non-lapsed have been beaten, imprisoned, and flogged. And what do we do with these two groups? How do we respond? Now, some of the confessors began writing letters for the lapsed, defending them and asking for them to be brought back into the church. And Cyprian said that this was inappropriate until the group of pastors and elders were able to meet and make a decision about how the lapsed were to be taken care of. But the problem is that some of the pastors and elders were also those that were lapsed. So imagine a presbytery meeting. Some of you maybe have been to a presbytery meeting. You come to a presbytery meeting, and one of the communications has to do with how we deal with Christians that were lapsed during the persecution. And about a third of those in the presbytery meeting are men that were unfaithful to Christ during that time. It's difficult. It's difficult. Now, eventually in North Africa, the bishops met, and this is the decision that they made. They said, to balance the need for compassion and forgiveness of sin with the uncompromising statements of the scripture against idolatry, each case must be considered individually on its own merits. Those that receive fake certificates of sacrifice were to be remitted only after a time of penance. And those that sacrificed had prolonged penance and were only able to be reconciled to the church on their deathbeds. So they called that balanced. Okay, sounds a little hardcore to me. You can repent on your deathbed. You will be reconciled. You are not allowed to have communion until the end of your life. And that's what those that were lapsed lived with if they sacrificed. And if they got fake certificates, they had to go through some fruit of repentance. What does it look like? Penance. And this would be a win in Carthage. This is how it affects all of the rest of church history. It becomes a win for the power of bishops within the church. You know, the pastors, there's a mess within the pastorate, but the bishops make this decision, and it's imposed, and it is going to stand. Now, persecution ends, the plague ends, Cyprian's pastoring his church in Carthage, and then what do you know? Because he's in the ministry, I get it. There's a controversy that arises within the church, right? And the controversy has to do with baptism. Because not only was there a question related to confessors versus the lapsed and what do we do with these groups of people, there are also those that are coming back into the church that were baptized in other communions. And as they come back into the church after this persecution and they say, we actually want to be a member of this church, not that church. There's decisions that have to be made as to do with their baptism. Now, again, I don't mean to make all of you have to relive the year 2020, but during COVID, churches shut down and people from other churches went to join the churches that were open. And someday a church historian is going to write about the year 2020 in American Christianity. And they're going to find that churches that stayed open grew. And when they grew, growth brings change. Now, you guys don't know anything about that, but growth, everyone groans. Growth brings change in the church. And it's not even something that you can do anything about. You just have to manage it unto the glory of God and look to the scriptures. And this is what's happening as these other churches, remember, like the Montanists that we talked about, or the Marcionites, or there's other sects of Christianity that are throughout North Africa. And the question is, what do we do if you're baptized in a Marcionite church that denies the God of the Old Testament? Do we accept that baptism or not? And this becomes the debate. And the bishops get together at what's called the Council of Carthage in the year 230. And that date has to be wrong. And they need to be rebaptized because they were not really baptized in the first place. And Cyprian said that those baptized outside of the Spirit-filled community were never really baptized. So he says, it's not rebaptism, it's baptism, because your baptism didn't mean anything to begin with. Now, Rome hears this. The Bishop of Rome is named Stephen. And Stephen says, those bishops over in North Africa are crazy. You don't have to rebaptize people. He says, all you need to do is you pray and lay hands on these people, and God will accept that. They've already been baptized. Just pray and lay hands on them and move on. There's no reason to get into a whole controversy about who should be rebaptized and who shouldn't be rebaptized. So Cyprian hears this, and he goes to Rome to meet with Stephen. You know, he's going to sit in his office, and they're going to have a discussion about this and make a decision about it, because Cyprian doesn't need to have his people hear that the bishop in Rome thinks he's out of his mind for making this decision. So North Africa disagrees with Rome. Rome disagrees with North Africa. Cyprian goes to Rome to defend the North African position. And Stephen, in that meeting, calls Cyprian an antichrist. Okay? It's not how to win friends and influence people. And he calls him a false apostle. And Cyprian returns with calling Stephen arrogant, inconsistent, self-contradictory, inept, and erroneous. So they have a bit of a conflict. And this is something interesting. Stephen uses Rome's power to push his agenda. And he says, I am the one sitting in Peter's seat. And he takes the rights and the privileges that are connected to that and doubles down on it. And Cyprian says to him, and he says it in writing, that the bishop in Rome has set himself up as the bishop of bishops. He says, this is wrong. Now, eventually, we know that's going to grow and the papacy is going to grow and expand. But here early on, 250-ish, Cyprian is calling Rome out for that behavior. And he's saying, this is trouble. This is trouble in the making. And he's right. It is trouble in the making. Now, this controversy with Rome and baptism, it's going to be settled 55 years later when the Donatus controversy happens, which we'll talk about. And Cyprian's view would be abandoned and Rome's view would become the official position of the church, that people don't need to be rebaptized that come from these positions. Now let's look at his writing. I won't spend much time on this because he had such a great story. But he has 13 treatises and his correspondence. There's 82 letters that survive. So you can read some of his letters that happen while he's underground. It also includes an autobiography called The Life and Passion of St. Cyprian. And the minutes of the Seventh Council of Carthage. So he's the bishop that is over the council in Carthage. And he's moderating that, but he also takes minutes too. We wouldn't do that. We separate moderators and clerks. But as moderator, he also took the minutes of that. So we have the minutes of that as well. There is a book that he wrote called On the Unity of the Church. And this is written in response to the lapses in persecution. And one of the quotes there is, "The church cannot of its very nature be divided, for Christ signified that unity is of the very essence when he first entrusted Peter the keys of the kingdom and later entrusted them to all the apostles. They were of equal rank and honor, and Peter was given the first to show that the church cannot be anything other than one." So he writes this early book on the unity of the church. And he writes a book on mortality. And this is during the plague that he writes this. And he encourages Christians to look to eternity rather than looking to today. And interestingly, looking at some of those numbers of the, it's called the Cyprian plague, by the way, because he writes about it extensively. So you can Google Cyprian plague and you can find a lot about this plague in the Roman Empire that Cyprian had written about. But remember Alexandria? We've talked a few times about Alexandria. In the year 250, the population of Alexandria was 500,000. And after the plague, which was like a two-year plague, the population was 190,000. So you imagine, you're going to have Christians writing about death because everybody is having death in their homes. Everybody. In that, he says, "The fact of the strength of this disease overpowers our people, just as it does the Gentiles, disturbs most people, as if Christians believed only to enjoy the world all the more, safe from the touches of evil." So this is one of the questions. Cyprian, help me with this. Be my pastor. Why is God letting this happen to non-Christians and Christians? And they're wrestling through that question, and he answers that. He says, "God does not protect Christians so that we would enjoy the world more, safe from the touches of evil." And he goes on, "But as long as we are there in the world, we are joined with the whole human race in the equality of flesh." We're all going to experience difficult things, right? So when you're evangelizing, if you use any of those old 1980s tactics that says your life is going to be so great if you become a Christian, Cyprian's like, no, that's not how it works. Life's hard for everybody, Christians and non-Christians alike. So that's on mortality. And then Cyprian dies a martyr. So the year 258, he is arrested. And we actually have the transcript has been found of that arrest and his martyrdom. Well, I guess we weren't done yet. And it's September 14, the year 258. Cyprian stands before the proconsul, and they ask him the question, "Are you Cyprian?" He says, "Yes, I am." And then he's asked, are you the one that presents himself as the leader of this sacrilegious sect?" He says, "I am." "The most holy emperor bids you to sacrifice." Cyprian says, "I will not." "Think it over." Cyprian says, "Do what you have to do in order to do it. In such a just cause, there is nothing to think over." So the magistrate pronounces the sentence. The sentence is, "You have long lived sacrilegiously and have gathered many into your criminal sect and set yourself up as an enemy to the gods and their religious rites. The pious and most holy emperors failed to bring you back to the observance of their religious ceremonies. Therefore, since you have been seen to be an instigator of the worst crimes, we will make an example of you and those who have associated with your wicked actions. The respect for the law will be sanctioned by your blood. Having said this, the decree is read, I order that Cyprian be punished by beheading. And Cyprian looks him in the eye and he says, thanks be to God. Following the sentence, he's taken out. It says he takes off his outer cloak. He hands it to the deacons that are with him there. And he is then beheaded. And we're told that Cyprian was martyred on September 14, as I mentioned. And as he was executed, others gave themselves up. I'm a Christian too. I didn't sacrifice either. And it led to beheading after beheading after beheading of those that looked to him and said, he is faithful and we will be faithful too. And this is the story of Cyprian. And we're reminded that the glory of Jesus Christ was what he sought in the midst of a difficult life and ministry.